Oh, baby, baby. If you guys thought that football was over because the Super Bowl's over and the season's over, you're wrong. Football is never over, especially when you're these three guys right here, including myself, Hogan, talking right now. We're here on Between the Tackles. My buddy, my pal, my co-host, Burge, he's back. He's alive. He's not dying somewhere in solitary confinement after watching the Eagles win, like Manish probably should have been after they won. Burge, my man, what's going on?
Oh, what's going on, dude? I'm pumped to be back. Got a new microphone for this recording, so now you can all hear my voice so much clearer. I know you guys all want to hear me spout off all of my horrible takes, but now you're going to hear them a lot clearer. Great to be back. Can't wait to get into this with you.
That's right. That's right. Well, we're pumped to have you back, buddy. We got the trio back in action just in time to kick off the official start of the off season. Manish, my friend, how is the hangover? Have you finally stopped drinking your face off because the Dirty Birds won the Super Bowl, or what's going on with you?
Yeah, it was fun. It's been a fun couple of weeks. I know we'll get into it at some point, but apparently Eagles players are not as happy with the organization as the fans are, as evidenced by the NFLPA grades that were released this week, which I found to be really eye-opening in some respects.
Well, you know what? You want to talk about it. We're just going to dive right on into that subject, actually. So for you guys out there listening, this is going to be kind of a no agenda, off the rails episode. We got an agenda. We got some things to talk about, but we're going to be all over the place. We're going to be talking about the combine at some point. We're talking about team grades. That's what we're going to kick off with. We got a bunch of news to go through, including some stuff with Justin Tucker, Aaron Rodgers, the whole shebang. We're here for a good time, not a long time. So we're going to go over everything. But right now, Manish, my man, get us started. Let's talk because you were the one that sent this to Burge and I. I usually take a peek at these, but you were the one that kicked it off with the official grades that the players take through. Is it through the union or the Players Association that they grade their own teams on? Get us started, man. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this I believe is the third season that the Players Association, polls players anonymously, 1,600 players on, about five or six, maybe seven different topics. Well, and I know that the three of us talked about this earlier this week, but there were a few things that really stood out to me. I'll start off with what I just alluded to. The Eagles won the Super Bowl, second time in franchise history. You would think everything is great, but a couple of things, at least within the Eagles report card, really jumped out at me. One is that Jeffrey Lurie, who is really lauded as one of the best owners in the league, if you talk to people around the league, even if you talk to Eagles fans, he only got a B, which is a little bit curious because I've always viewed him as one of the probably top five or so owners in the league for a number of different reasons. The other thing that I thought was really interesting about this report card that the Eagles handed out was they were bottom five in treatment of families, and I think the grade was a C minus that the Eagles players gave the organization when it comes to treatment of family. So, you dig a little bit deeper and you think, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that, players can't get suites for their family members during games? Is it about where family members are after games when they're greeted by the players and hang out with the players after games? For the Eagles, at least, the biggest source of consternation among the players was that there's no in-game daycare for home games. And you would think, well, what does that even mean? Like, what can't these people afford having a nanny or something like that? But a lot of, believe it or not, a lot of players' families, they bring their kids to the games, and if they're old enough to watch the games, of course they're going to be with the mother or the girlfriend. But there's enough players who have kids who obviously can't sit through a 2.5, 3 hour game. And teams, for the most part, are pretty good about having some kind of daycare facility inside their own building. And for whatever reason, Jeffrey Lurie has not implemented that at Lincoln Financial Field. So, I'm getting a little bit in the weeds. There's not that much to complain about if you're in the Eagles universe, but I did think that those were two interesting things with the Eagles. And then, real quick, one other team. There's only one team in the league that did not receive an A in any of the categories. And really not surprising, but that was the New York Jets. No A in any of the, like I said, maybe six or seven different categories. The Jets were also the only team that gave their owner an F, Woody Johnson, for a lot of different reasons that were outlined this season. in terms of how he dealt with firing the head coach in season, the general manager in season, that story in The Athletic that was really damning as it relates to how Woody Johnson's teenage son, Brick Johnson, has a lot of influence over him, which in turn, trickles down throughout the organization in terms of decision-making. Maybe a little bit of hyperbole in that story, but I think the larger point is that the players were not happy with Woody Johnson, and by extension, it's also his brother, Christopher Johnson. Being around both of those guys for about 15 years, it's not a surprise that they rank dead last in the NFL in terms of how players view them from an ownership perspective. So, again, a couple of things that jumped out. I think there was also, it escapes me which team, but one team got the dreaded F-minus for one of the categories. So, you got an F-minus. At least Woody Johnson didn't get that. So, anyway, just a couple of things that jumped out to me. I find a lot of value in these surveys because they are anonymous. Players can really say what they feel without fear of any kind of retribution. And at the end of the day, media members, fans, can have their opinions about what they think an organization is like. But I find it eye-opening to get the players' perspective, right or wrong. I'm not saying that they're right 100% of the time, because they're not. But it's interesting to gauge how players feel about various aspects of their own organization.
I'm going to jump in here because I'm going to talk about my team, the Patriots. This survey here is really eye-opening when you're looking at the state of the New England Patriots and how far from grace they have fallen over the last 5 or 6 years. I want to know, and Hogan, I'm going to ask you this question. How does a team that has its own planes, their own personal jets, get an F for team travel? How does that happen? They're their own jets. The aviation guy in me wants to cry BS on that, but I know I'm not in the planes. I've never been in them. So there's something going on with this here. The whole thing is crocky.
The first guess that comes to mind is if I'm a player, I'm probably not too happy that my head coach is sitting in the back of the plane playing cards with me on the way home after getting my ass kicked by the Arizona Cardinals, they were the only team that scored worse than the Patriots. So,
but the Patriots, they gave their head coach a B+.
I don't know. That's the Kraft. I mean, Kraft got a D for ownership. Yeah. So I'm not surprised,
Well, for me, Kraft getting a D, for a guy who's, over the last 20 plus years is talked about as one of the, the best owners in the game, in the history of the game, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, we've seen him kind of fall from grace a bit when it's come to, him trying to get into the Hall of Fame, his whole thing with that went on down in Florida. We won't get into that. But, you have all these things that play into it. Now, Robert Kraft getting a D, that does not help his situation of wanting to get into the Hall of Fame. I don't care what anybody says about what he's done in the past. Clearly, the Krafts are doing something wrong if the players on their team are extremely unhappy in multiple categories. I think that the graphic you sent to us over maybe it was a couple days ago, listed them overall ranking of all of these. They were 31st of 32, like you said, the second to last. To me, that's a joke for this organization that's had so much success over the last 20 plus years, obviously not the last 5 or 6, but it really, really shows how far they've fallen.
Well, that's the biggest thing. I think I look at it where you see the perennial success they had for Brady and Belichick for so long that covered up a lot of BS along the way. That's the biggest thing, is you can get away with having a mediocre weight room and crappy team travel and not a great nutrition plan or whatever else is graded on that list, as long as you win and you win Super Bowls. It's big. I mean, Manish talked about it to kick this thing off, talking about how the Philadelphia Eagles just won the Super Bowl. But if you look at their responses on the survey, you would think they're a bunch of miserable bastards. I mean, they're clearly not, though. That's the thing. They just won a Super Bowl. They obviously love what they're doing, but at the same time, they're not happy with some of the facilities and stuff. The biggest surprise that I want to talk about in that is I tend to gravitate towards the head coaching grades and the ownership grades. And the ownership grades, not surprising at all to see who was rated low and who was rated high. The head coaching one is always kind of an enigma to me. And the biggest one that jumped out to me, believe it or not, no coach graded lower than a C. But the ones that graded at the C level were kind of a little bit of a surprise. Kevin Stefanski for the Cleveland Browns, a two-time Coach of the Year winner, getting a C from Cleveland, where it's like, I don't know. I usually cut Stefanski a lot of slack. I personally think he's a great coach. And I actually had somebody ask me that if the New England Patriots weren't able to get Mike Vrabel and hypothetically Stefanski was on the table, would I take him? Absolutely.
100%.
What he's been able to do with that organization with what he's been had on the roster and still able to win games, obviously not, you know, make deep playoff runs, but the fact that players kind of don't like him is the vibe I'm getting from the survey is very, very interesting to me. And I don't know if either of you got a comment about that, where it's like, I as an outside fan looking in, I would take Stefanski all day, but as a player, is he just not likable?
I don't know, but I mean, I'm looking at the other two coaches real quick, Manish, before I pass on to you. The other two coaches that got C's are no longer employed by their teams.
Right, so like, expectedly so.
Yeah, so that's an interesting tidbit.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting to get a window on what matters to players. As fans, we just look at, you know, bottom line, wins, losses. You know, Hogan, you mentioned Stefanski won 2-time coach of the year. That's a direct reflection of wins and losses. And expectations prior to the season versus what the final result was from a win-loss perspective. But there are a lot of different elements of how you relate to players. You know, I hate to circle back to the Eagles, but they are Super Bowl champions, so I'll do that. Nick Sirianni got an A-. And look, Nick Sirianni, among a segment of fans that follow the Eagles, and certainly among a segment of fans who aren't Eagles fans, but just NFL fans and media as well, they lampooned Nick Sirianni. I mean, what does he actually do? He's getting carried by his coordinators, Vic Fangio, the brains behind the defense. Kellen Moore was the brains behind the offense. I mean, this guy, I mean, who cares what his record is? Like, he doesn't really do much. But when you look at the survey this past season, Eagles players gave him an A-. And I think a large part of that in this particular example is that he relates really well to players. And that stuff resonates with him. That matters to them. Day-to-day interactions, whether it's, you know, on the practice field, in the facility, you know, managing egos, massaging egos, all of that stuff is important to players. And that's stuff that fans don't care about because it's a bottom line industry for fans. Is the coach winning games? Yes. So he's good. Is he not winning games? No, he's bad. Is he calling plays? No, well, then he's maybe overrated. In you know, Nick Sirianni's case, that's certainly been one of the bugaboos with him. But I like these surveys because they really give you that window into what matters to players. Like the Bengals, for example, were really ticked off that their dietitian is only a part-time employee. And she is someone who's in the building, I believe, twice a week. They want her to be in you know, every day that the players are in, or at least 5 times a week, because you know, nutrition matters to players in terms of how they perform day to day. And they, you know, that is not something that a fan would necessarily even think about. So I think it's fascinating. You know, some people don't take too much stock into it. I actually think it's one of the more revealing things that the Players Association does. It really gives fans an opportunity to see what's actually happening in their building. It's really a terrific idea. I don't remember who started it a few years back. But to me, you know, I get a lot out of it. And, you know, Bird, you were talking about team travel getting an F, the Patriots getting an F. At least they weren't the Bills, because the Bills actually did get an F- when it came to team travel.
So, good.
They're better than the Bills in that respect. But, you know, all joking aside, I really think it's a valuable piece of information that comes out in the offseason. And I enjoy looking through every team or most of the teams and, you know, seeing surprising, you know, things that really kind of I wouldn't have anticipated, but that's reality. This is actually real. You know, whether or not players are being overly sensitive or not, that's a different discussion, a different question. But this is telling you exactly how players feel about you know, a handful of different topics.
Yeah, it's interesting because you look at teams like Dallas and Las Vegas, A and A- for their head coach, both gone, both out the door. You know, you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, they've had this amazing run of, you know, the dynastic run. They give their owner a C-. Like,
yeah.
It really does open your eyes more so just than just looking at the bottom line like all of us fans do. It certainly is very interesting to see.
Well, I was going to say the reason why the Buffalo Bills got an F minus for team travel is you'd give it an F minus if you had to snow blow and dig out 10 feet of snow every time you had to try and drive to practice. So I completely get that. I would give them an F minus every time too if I had to deal with that weather up there. Let's
It's interesting, real quick. I know we got to move on, but real quick, one of the issues that Bills players had was that the coaches were getting business seats and first class seats where the players, you know, were stuck in first class. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, that obviously matters if that's the, you know, the feedback that they gave the PA.
Interesting. Sean McDermott, you hear that? Cut the crap, man. Take care of your players on the planes, okay? Well, speaking of in that division with the Bills, we're going to move on to a guy that we love to smack talk around here, and everybody knows and loves him. His name is Aaron freaking Rodgers. He's no longer on the Jets. I mean, technically, he kind of still is, right? Unless they've officially released him at this point. But either way, he is not going to be playing for the New York Jets next year. The big question mark is, where is he going to end up? And as of right now, there's kind of a hoopla going on with the whole Matthew Stafford situation that's going on in LA with the Rams, because I don't know if you've, you know, had your head underneath a rock, but apparently the Rams would love to get rid of Cooper Kupp, which is insanity to me. One of the best receivers easily in the NFL currently. And apparently Matthew Stafford's wife is on record as saying if Kupp's not there, Stafford's not going to be there, and it's opened a whole can of worms. Burgess, my man, who the hell is playing quarterback for the Rams next year? Is it Rodgers? Is it Stafford? Where the hell's Rodgers going? I don't know what's happening anymore.
You're going to ask me as a fan, like, the guy needs to go away. Like, he was absolutely dreadful with the New York Jets in the year plus that he was there. Could he have a sense of resurrecting his career over the age of 40 with the Los Angeles Rams under Sean McVay? Sure, that's a possibility. But, you know, looking at spots for him in places of where, what team is going to, is like, we'll say a quarterback away from really making a, you know, a push to a Super Bowl. I feel like that would be the type of place that Rodgers is going to look to go. I don't think he's going to find it just based on his performance that he's, you know, he's shown with the Jets. I mean, hell, the Jets were better without him the year before than they were with him this year. So for me, I wanted to see him have a nice day. See you later. Goodbye. But I'm sure somebody will take a chance on it.
You don't want to see him at the Raiders?
No. I don't want to see him anywhere. I don't want to
Manish,
see him.
Manish, where's Rodgers going to be?
Well, if Matthew Stafford does in fact get traded, then there's a clear opening there that would make sense, I think, if you're Sean McVay and Les Snead. And if they are indeed going to move on from Cooper Kupp, which is, you know, all indications are that they are, then you can just replace him with Davante Adams and, you know, have a package deal with Rodgers and Adams going to LA. Because I think reportedly Davante does want to go back to the West Coast. So that would make a lot of sense. You know, Aaron Rodgers is, you know, no pun intended, is an enigma, which is the name of his three-part documentary on Netflix, which, by the way, I did watch finally this week. And I don't want to veer off too much onto a tangent because I'm, you know, want to do that. But I actually liked it a lot. I really didn't have that many expectations. You know, I don't agree with everything Aaron Rodgers stands for, believes in, but there are certain things I absolutely believe. You know, we're not going to go through the details, but I think there's a lot of things about him that are misunderstood. There are some things that are understood perfectly about him, but there are, I think, a lot of things that are, you know, unfair. And even if you just look at this past season, Bert, you hit on it. Look, they won 5 games. So that's ultimately a reflection of the quarterback. He's going to get the blame, even if it's not necessarily all his fault. You know, statistically, and I know numbers can lie, but statistically, Aaron Rodgers was not awful. You know, almost 3,900 passing yards, 28 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. I know that, you know, some of those numbers were backloaded after they were out of postseason contention. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But it's not as if he was as bad as actually I thought he might be coming off the Achilles. I actually thought that he was pretty good on the tail end of the season. You could say because the pressure was off. I don't really know why, but he didn't limp to the finish line. He had some uneven performances in the second half of the season, but he also had some, you know, some performances that make you think, yeah, he's not the four-time MVP, you know, that he was as a younger player. But this is a guy who, if surrounded with talent, can still help you win. Even though he didn't help the Jets win, that doesn't mean that he won't help another team like the Rams, for example. When, for me, I've always thought these last few years, it's not a matter of whether Aaron Rodgers can be good on any given week, because I still think he can be. It's a matter of, can he consistently be good for a 17-week season? And most importantly, can he stay healthy at the advanced age that he is? I don't believe that he can, but I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world if the Rams took a flyer on him if Stafford left. Now, what I would say is Aaron Rodgers has made it clear that he wants to go to a quote-unquote good team. I know that's a vague description, but he was asked that recently, and that's kind of how he boiled it down. That being said, there's always rumors during combine week. When you're at the combine, every major decision maker in the NFL is there, head coach, general manager, a bunch of chatty scouts are there, a lot of information hungry media members are there. So a lot of what ultimately happens over the next 3 to 4 weeks when free agency rolls around is actually discussed in the rumor mill in Indianapolis. And one of the rumors that came out, I believe Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk is the one who brought it to light, was that Aaron Rodgers actually reached out to the New York Giants to find out if they would be interested in his services. And clearly the Giants, wouldn't anticipate being a playoff contender or a quote-unquote good team at this point. To me, that kind of indicates that maybe the market for Aaron Rodgers isn't as large as some people might think. Initially, we thought maybe, five, six, maybe seven teams. The Steelers were always in that mix. The Rams, when the Stafford news came out, were in that mix. Logically, you thought maybe Pete Carroll would be fine with him in Las Vegas. But maybe those options have really shrunk. So I'm very curious to see where he lands. He's going to play. He's not retiring. Barring some kind of life-altering experience that he undergoes over the next couple months. He wants to play. He's made it clear, and this was made clear actually in the documentary, he wants to end his career on a high note, and to, I think by every objective measure, regardless of what the numbers were this past season, leaving with a 5-12 record, he's not leaving on a high note. So he's going to be motivated to play. I don't know if he can stay healthy. I think the Rams actually make sense for him. If Stafford's gone, he's going to be a very cheap option, which is funny to say because he's Aaron Rodgers. And, by the way, Aaron Rodgers is number one on the career earnings list in NFL history. He's made more money than any player who's ever played. I believe it's somewhere in the $380 million range. Ironically, I guess, the guy who's number two on that list all time, I believe, is Matthew Stafford. Stafford's in the top five. So these guys, have made a lot of money, but I think that he would be a cheap, relatively cheap option for the Rams, a lot cheaper than what people might actually think, because I don't think money motivates him now. Clearly, as I said, almost $400 million in career earnings. I just think he wants to be in a place where he can succeed and end his career. And I think the Rams would be a really good spot for both sides if Matthew Stafford is dealt.
Maybe we can send our boy Joe Scherr to an ayahuasca retreat with Aaron Rodgers, and we can get some inside scoops.
They've got footage in the documentary. Not my thing. More power to the people who were there. A couple of NFL players, I think Jordan Poyer and Adrian Colbert, were also part of that particular group when the documentary crew was out there. But, not my thing. But, it's interesting. Not something I don't think I would ever participate in. But, look, it works for Aaron Rodgers, and it works for a lot of people. So, who am I to, criticize or judge that?
Hey, all we needed was Aaron Rodgers to play one snap of the season after his torn Achilles, and he would have ended up in the ayahuasca trip with on his own to figure it all out. He made a bet with himself. He almost lost it. We almost got to witness it, but Joe got off the hook.
I'm just waiting for when Jalen Hurts has his Enigma documentary. That way Manish can absolutely bash him over and over again like he loves to do. I got to bring it up.
Like I said in previous podcasts, I get enough heat from my friends on a text chain. But look, you got to give credit where it's due. This week, Jalen Hurts was recognized as the Philadelphia Citizen of the Year for all of his charitable efforts. So, kudos to him on that. And, I'll leave it there. I'll leave it at that for now.
I was gonna say, does his, is the, he's got the citizen of the year because he's the only one that didn't climb a street pole or punch a horse at this Super Bowl parade, but that's okay. I won't go there.
Look, he was promoting product. You know, that he's part of the Michael Jordan brand, and he had the Love Hurts. I don't know if you guys saw this, but he had the Love Hurts sweatshirt that he was peddling during the Eagles' Super Bowl parade.
Can't be worse than Gardner Johnson sweatshirt. We're not going to talk about that, though. We're going to move on to the next subject. But obviously, we just talked about Aaron Rodgers, his potential there. He's a former Packer, so we got to stay in the news cycle with what the Green Bay Packers did. And kind of going off of that with your Philadelphia Eagles there, Manish, the Packers were the lone team to put in a rule change to eliminate tushin pushing. No more pushing the tushes. They don't want to see it no more, which as a football fan, I'm kind of torn because I think it's an awesome play. I love seeing it. And it's one of those things that if you can't stop it, it's on you. I mean, that's the whole point of an offense versus defense is you're paid to stop the opposing team. And if you can't do it, well, I'm sorry, that's your fault. And the fact is the Philadelphia Eagles have only won one Super Bowl since they started doing the tush push. Because they didn't do it when Nick Foles was there back in the 2018 season.
No, it started with Hurts. Yeah,
it started with Jalen Hurts. So at the end of the day, it's not like they're winning every single football game. They're the most dominant team in the history of history because of the tush push. It's just a competitive advantage they have for their offensive line and their quarterback. Burgess, I'm going to start with you on this one. Does this play deserve to be banned, or are the Packers just hating?
See, I like you, I'm torn because other teams have tried to, you know, mimic what the Eagles have done, and they cannot execute it in such a way that it is almost an automatic play. Most of the time, it does convert what they're trying to do, and this goes for any team in the league, but the Philadelphia Eagles are far and away the best team at executing it. But for me, the defense is at such a disadvantage when the quarterback snaps the ball and he's got two guys behind him pushing him forward. Like, to me, that to that part of it is, I don't want to say it's an unfair advantage because, like you, I believe what you, your mentality on it is, well, you can't stop it. It's 100% on the defense. But at the same time, there's so much mass and force going forward when you have these big, large men pushing each other, especially from behind and getting that real tush push that I watch the play and I'm like, every time I see any team really line up, I expect a conversion. If a defense stops it, it's like, wow, fantastic play by the defense to stop it. Because at the end of the day, it almost does seem like an automatic conversion of whatever they're trying to, whether it be a first down or a touchdown.
Real quick. Okay. Real quick. Going back to the Patriot days with Tom Brady, he was the master of the third and one, fourth and one conversions with no
assistance,
push. So, but they didn't call for it to be banned then. It's now that the Eagles have taken advantage of a different side of it. Now you have a problem with it. I'm playing devil's advocate.
I understand. I'm looking at it from a different perspective because when Brady snaps the ball, it's just him going forward with it. He wasn't getting help from anybody behind him. It was basically, I'm gonna take the ball and I'm gonna beat you on his own. Now you're getting two guys behind really pushing forward. Now I know that they did a search on the stats basically for injuries on the play of the tush, because I want to say that might have been part of the motivation, is that these linemen are getting down so low that maybe more injuries are coming out of it, which was not the case. Like, there was no significant data to indicate that more injuries occurred because on this play than any other play in football. So see, I'm not gonna be that guy that's not gonna pick one way or the other, because like one part of me says
what a loser.
You
said
the
same thing. You said the same thing, Hogan. Oh, I'm torn on this. I don't know which way I'm gonna go.
I'm the one giving you the question. I'm making
okay. Let me ask you.
It works.
Let me ask you.
What
should they ban it?
No.
Okay.
That was hard. I answered it. Manish, go.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not torn. Yes. I'm not in the least bit torn. I don't like the play. I've never liked the play. I'm with Burge in the sense that you've got Dallas Goedert and Saquon Barkley on most plays pushing the quarterback, into the end zone in most cases, or on a fourth and short, third and short. I don't like it. I'm glad, Hogan, that you brought up Tom Brady, because as Burge said, nobody was behind Tom Brady other than the football gods, I guess, pushing him forward. But there was no actual man or men behind him. He was just so smart about maybe waiting a tick, seeing where, you know, there was maybe an opening, or you know, I don't know what his thought process was, but he was brilliant at it. He wouldn't just get the yard. He would get like two and a half yards. You know, sometimes I saw him like skirt through for like 3 yards. And that's just his own doing. And that's a quarterback sneak. If the Eagles want to do a quarterback sneak because they tout how Jalen Hurts can squat 5 billion pounds, he's got the force in his thighs, then just do that. I don't like the idea of anybody being pushed forward. And that actually extends beyond the tush push. I don't like it when a running back's in the open field and it's kind of like held up by a couple of would-be tacklers. And then an offensive lineman comes running from 10 yards down the field and kind of like spearheads himself into the pile to push the running back forward. I don't like any kind of forward assistance by teammates. Obviously, it's in focus because of the tush push. And you're right, Birch. There was a study that the NFL revealed this year that said that there were no injuries. However, that doesn't mean there's not a potential for injury. And I think, honestly, that Chris Jones in the Super Bowl did get hurt on the tush push because he lined up really like perpendicular to every other offensive and defensive lineman. He was like lined up sideways, and he may have hurt his shoulder or, I don't know, arm, tricep, whatever it may be. And you could say, well, hey, that's Chris Jones' fault. I mean, who lines up like that? You shouldn't do that. Sean McDermott, I think, of all the people who came out this week and kind of questioned it, you know, Raheem Morris was very vehement about not liking it. Sean McDermott even said he didn't like it. And I thought that was ironic, only because toward the second half of the season, for really at least in the second half of the season, maybe even longer, but I remember the second half of the season, the Bills using the tush push with Josh Allen. Well, with a lot of success, but not nearly as much success.
They did it in that playoff game, and they did not have the success.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But I think like when they were using it in November, December, I think it was actually working pretty well. So I thought that was interesting that the Bills head coach would come out against it when he used it himself. I just don't think it's a football play. I mean, I don't know if it's a rugby play. That's an easy thing for people to say. I'm not even saying that. You know, a buddy of mine and I were talking about it this week, and he showed me footage from the 1923 Michigan State game, which it looked like they were doing tush push type stuff. I'm like, are we really doing that? Like, we're going back to the 1920s, you know, pre-stock market crash, pre-depression. Like, this is ridiculous. I don't think it's even necessary for the Eagles. I know that Nick Sirianni came out this week and took it as a personal affront that teams would dare, talk out against the tush push. It's almost like, you know, how dare they? You know, we do it better than everyone else. Yeah, they do it better than everyone else. Initially it was because Jason Kelce was so good at doing certain elements after the snap, and Cam Jurgens, their new center, is doing very similar things. They go to the left. Jordan Mailata, who is actually a former rugby player from Australia, is really good at, you know, some of the technical elements of the push as well. I just don't like it. And frankly, I don't think the Eagles need it. You know, all the tush push does, in my estimation, is A, take out any drama, because Burge, you said it's basically a guarantee or a lock. And secondly, all it does is pad Jalen Hurts' rushing stats. Now, if I have to hear one more time about how Jalen Hurts has X amount of rushing stats and it's more than Cam Newton, like, anybody who's watched football over the last 20 years knows that Cam Newton is a better running quarterback than Jalen Hurts. And look, Jalen Hurts is fine. He's a fine player. But every comparison, I know I'm going on a tangent, but I just have to say it because we're talking about the tush push. Every comparison between Jalen Hurts and quarterback X is, what are his total touchdowns? When you're not talking about Jalen Hurts, common sense tells you, when you're comparing quarterbacks, how many passing touchdowns do they have? They're quarterbacks. They're supposed to throw the football. And when you include these fugazi tush push touchdowns into Jalen Hurts' total touchdown number, it really shouldn't irk me. You know, I'm an Eagles fan. I love when the Eagles win. But to me, it's such a fraudulent way of stacking up a quarterback's greatness. And to me, again, Jalen Hurts is a fine player. He's a Super Bowl champion, just like Brad Johnson was. You know, Brad Johnson had some good years. I'm not saying he is Brad Johnson. I think Trent Dilfer. A little bit better. Yeah, well, Trent Dilfer was a complete journeyman. who rode the coattails of the Ravens defense. And he only started half that season or three quarters of that season. Tony Banks started before getting benched. Now, Jalen Hurts is he's a higher quality player than Trent Dilfer. But this idea of like putting him on a pedestal in rarefied air with Joe Burrow and Josh Allen, who, yeah, I know they haven't beaten the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, and saying that Jalen Hurts is good or better than those guys, it's just laughable to me. Like, watch football. If you watch football, you know that Joe Burrow and Josh Allen are better quarterbacks than Jalen Hurts. Now, what Jalen Hurts is a champion, and he'll be a champion forever. You can never take that away. But I just think that the tush push, for a number of different reasons, and part of it is, admittedly, this elevated status that Jalen Hurts has because of these fraudulent rushing touchdowns that he accumulates via tush push, I don't know, irritates me. And again, I'm an Eagles fan, so take that for what it's worth.
Get my checklist out. Make Manish mad about Jalen Hurts. Ching! Done.
God, he's a good player. He's a good player. He's not a horrible player. He's a good player. He's just not what Eagles fans that I have to hear from every day. He isn't what they think he is. And they think he's the second best quarterback in the NFL. And frankly, he's not even close to that. And I'm not going to fight you on it.
I just like getting you all fired up. That's my job. Usually I make Burgess fired up. Now I got to make you fired up, Manish. That's just how we roll around here.
I mean, I got a friend who's a fraudulent Steelers fan. He's born and raised in the Philly area. He's a Steelers fan because he supposedly remembers being in his crib watching the Steelers win Super Bowls in the 70s. And that guy's all over my back. So he is just all over me when it comes to Hurts. And I'm like, dude, you're not even a real fan. Like, you're a Philadelphian who's a Steelers fan. And the guy literally wore Steelers gear to the link and rooted against the Eagles 3 months ago. And now he's pretending to be an Eagles fan because, you know, the Eagles are Super Bowl champions.
Oh, that's the worst. Get out of here, baby.
It's terrible. His name is Wade. I just want to make that. I'm going to let him know that I gave him a little mention of the podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Shout out, Wade. Shout out for being a bandwagon. I'm on your side, Manish. We don't take kindly to that around here.
Great guy. One of my close friends. But, I mean, he's completely off on this.
Well, obviously. All right, gentlemen, before we get any further along here, we are going to take a very quick ad break to hear from our sponsors. Don't go anywhere. Between the Tackles, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Between the Tackles. Again, I am Hogan. I'm here. I'm getting Manish fired up. I'm getting Burgess hopefully fired up soon enough with our no agenda off-season kickoff party that we got going on here. Because again, football season is technically over, but for us, football season never ends. That's just how things go around here in the world of Between the Tackles. Come on, we're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. Football is certainly not going anywhere. Gentlemen, let's move on to some more topics that I've been, dancing across the news wavelengths here. And one that's a little bit interesting that, again, we haven't gotten all the information that's technically come out yet, but we've already gotten statements being made by both the player and his wife now. I'm, of course, talking about Justin Tucker, who seems to find himself in a world of trouble, a la almost a Sean Watson-ish kind of things going on with accusations being made, with massages and all that. He recently came out and said that he's not guilty of anything, but that he's sorry for the way that things have been going on. His wife backs him up 100%. Burgess, I'm going to throw it to you first. Justin Tucker had a very off year last year for considering the standard he set for himself and what he's done for, the last, 13 years he's been in the NFL. He's arguably, if there was no Adam Vinatieri, I would hands down say Justin Tucker's the greatest NFL kicker I've ever seen. But there is an Adam Vinatieri, so he's the second best kicker I've ever seen. And obviously, he's a Texas guy, so I got to love him. But I got to ask you to start off with, is Justin Tucker's career over or what's going on here?
It's going to be certainly interesting to see where it plays out over the next few months as, more information comes out about the situation and all that. Now, if we're talking just strictly from a player football standpoint, guy had an off year. So, no, he's not done. For that reason, I don't believe the Ravens are going to move on in any way. We're talking about the football side of things, but if certain things start to continue to come out in regards to this issue, you could very well be seeing, I don't want to use the word canceled, but something along those lines with Justin Tucker, which, you know, as a football fan would be, you know, really disappointing to have happen, because like you said, he is one of the greatest kickers of all time. You know, certainly the best kicker of like this generation of football, you know, post Adam Vinatieri. And, you know, to see that happen because of some really poor choices made by the player, if it turns out to be, you know, true, that'll be real disappointing for the football fan in me to see that. Just, you know, despite my feelings of watching Justin Tucker kick in games against the Patriots in the playoffs, where it was like, come on, I remember when Billy Cundiff was the kicker and he shanks the kick in the AFC Championship game to send the Patriots to the Super Bowl.
We love Billy Cundiff around here. There's no Billy Cundiff bashing. He is one of the best kickers of all time. We love him. Thank you. Yep. Thank you, Billy Cundiff.
Exactly. And then sure enough, the next year, right after that, the Ravens get the best kicker of this generation out of that. I'm going to reserve judgment on it until all the facts are out and everything's decided on it. But yeah, just saying, if it goes, you know, the wrong way for Justin Tucker, it'll be a real disappointing thing for me as a football fan.
Manish, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I'm going to echo some of what Birch said. You know, it's easy for people on social media, fans, people who have podcasts, to kind of cast aspersions in a situation like this. But you really do have to wait until there's more information out there. And, you know, some skeptics would say, well, 16 people coming out and alleging, you know, similar things, isn't that enough for you? You don't know the details. I find it interesting that Tucker has, you know, essentially doubled down and apologized twice, because he had his initial apology several weeks ago and came out this week and reiterated that a little bit more in depth. I think, you know, he said he didn't intend to cross any boundaries or disrespect anyone. He did apologize if some people felt uncomfortable, because that was never his intention. Hogan, as you said, his wife came out, fully supported him. You know, he's a husband, he's a father. You know, those are important things to consider. I know the fans don't care about that kind of stuff, but when you have these types of allegations, you really do have to sift through each one to, you know, find out what, as much as you can find out, to find out what may or may not have happened before you'll come to any kind of conclusion. I think the NFL will be very judicious about that. Eric DaCosta, the Baltimore Ravens general manager, and John Harbaugh were very careful with their words this week. You know, they obviously have a lot of respect for Tucker. I know that Harbaugh and Tucker are very close, have been for a very long time. You know, not just because he's a great character, but for a number of different reasons. So you really do have to see how this plays out. I know this is a broader statement I'm about to make, but something that, you know, I think teams should really consider, which is, you know, players, you know, feel comfortable around specific people to do massages. So I don't think that teams should necessarily mandate the team employee masseuses to work on them. But I do think that, you know, it's feasible for players to have their preferred masseuses come to the team facility and have the, you know, have the work done on their bodies in the team facility, maybe to have more of a quote unquote controlled environment. I don't know, just, you know, I'm just kind of spitballing here and brainstorming, but I do think in this particular case, it's so easy on social media to point fingers. You know, ultimately, you know, they may turn out to be correct, like in the Deshaun Watson case, but they may not. And it's so easy in this day and age, especially on X, to kind of, you know, cast aspersions and then have some kind of moral outrage, and then somebody else kind of piles on that moral outrage. And next thing you know, there's this snowball effect, and you know, and that can really affect people's lives, you know, whether it's a player or not a player. You know, you see it all the time. It's one of the really ugly parts of social media, and I've seen it myself. But on a much larger scale, Justin Tucker is just getting destroyed on social media by people that don't know the facts. You know, they don't know what happened, but they're morally outraged. And, you know, the louder you are, the more outraged you are in a scenario like this, the more you feel like you're being heard when you really don't know what you're talking about. And let's be honest, the three of us really don't know what we're talking about when it comes to this topic. We just know what the allegations were. We know one player One person is, you know, denying them. And beyond that, we don't know the details. It's just easy in this day and age to pile on athletes. And, you know, again, sometimes it bears out to be correct, but a lot of times it doesn't. And I would, you know, heed some caution here and keep in mind that, yeah, he's a multimillionaire. He's got more money than all of us can dream about. But he is, you know, he is a dad. And maybe I'm just sensitive because I'm a new dad. But let's kind of see where this goes. And if the information ultimately leads to him, you know, not deserving the right or not having the right to play anymore, then so be it. And then the judicial system will take care of itself. But I just think if this is an early stage in this situation, at this early stage, you just, you know, say, oh, this guy's, you know, he's done. He's a creep. You know, we're going to cancel him. That happens too much. It happens every day. And it's something that it bothers me. It's always bothered me. And again, give it some time, let it breathe. And let's see, you know, what more information comes out of this.
Right. Wonderfully said across the board about everything there. I mean, the only thing that I'm just going to go on record saying that I'm 100% correct about is he's the second best kicker behind Adam Vinatieri. I'm not wrong about that. You can fight me tooth and nail, but I'm going to go down swinging without, you know, fighting you on that one. So, and Adam Vinatieri got robbed. He should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. Amen. Anyway.
And kickers are not going to be first ballot Hall. Come on. Kickers cannot be first ballot Hall of Famers. I'm asking this honestly. I really don't know the answer to this, but is Morton Anderson in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe he is.
Pre-Vinatieri, Anderson was the best quarterback. I mean, best kicker in NFL history.
Yeah, he is.
Right.
And so if the best kicker in NFL history to that point didn't get in on the first ballot, then why should the best kicker since Morton Anderson get in as a first ballot Hall of Fame?
This is completely off topic from what we're talking about here, but no. I'm going to say it because it needs to be said, because this goes back to my irrational hatred of what the Hall of Fame does at this point. There shouldn't even be first ballot crap. You know what the Hall of Fame should be? You're either in or you're not in. Not, oh, wait X amount of years for you to get in, blah, blah, blah. You're a Hall of Famer or you're not. Just like Eli Manning is not a Hall of Famer. That's right. I said it again. Suck it, Eli. Yes. I had to throw it in here one more time because it's so good to tell you to suck it. Can't spell eliminated without Eli, and you're eliminated from the Hall of Fame. I did it. Anyway, let's move on to our next segment. Oh, I got myself going there for that one. All right, we got some combine stuff to talk about, but before we really get into the combine nitty gritty stuff, where I'm sure our good buddy Manish is going to give us some awesome stories, per usual, we got a couple of players that I want to talk about, and I'm going to split this up between the two of you. Where Burgess, I'm going to talk about a guy that has certainly been jumping all over the Patriots' radar recently, and that is Abdul Carter from Penn State, who the argument is being made right now that he could potentially go number one overall, being the best pass rusher that, you know, is coming out since Micah Parsons there from, you know, his alma mater as well. He might need foot surgery. The reports are kind of all over the place where doctors don't want him to get it. The stress fracture, he's saying he's 90%. He played last year on 60%. Is Abdul Carter a guy that you want to see the Patriots take a flyer on potentially if he's sitting there at four, or do we have bigger needs that we need to take care of?
Oh, if he's there at four, I'm smashing the draft button on Abdul Carter. Like, we saw what he did in the playoffs for Penn State, and basically throughout the whole year. And if that was 60% of what he was playing injured, I want to see what 100% looks like. And for me, as a Patriots fan, I'm hoping that this scares off the Tennessee Titans and, you know, the Cleveland Browns and these teams above the Patriots, because he's the guy, he's number one on my board. I want him above anything at that spot. I think he could really transform the Patriots defense and their pass rush, because we saw last year that their pass rush was non-existent. And I think he could really be a great piece for Mike Vrabel to work with on the defensive side of the ball. And I hope that, you know, this news that might give those teams a little bit of a pause. And I hope it just doesn't cause the Patriots to have a pause and have a situation, albeit a little bit differently, like Jalen Carter slipping in the draft. You know, what was it, 2 years ago, to the Eagles because of his legal issues. I hope that he's there for the Patriots, because, you know, outside of him, I'm not looking at a wide receiver, the flashy Travis Hunter. That's not where I want the Patriots to go. It's either Carter or an offensive lineman or a trade back. That's where I'm at. That's 100% where I'm at. Patriots need to focus on building those trenches this year.
Fatties, Fatties for the win. That's what we want. If Carter's not there, we're taking a fatty, whether it's Will Campbell or Kelvin Banks Jr. Take it to the bank because I said it. All right. You touched on a couple of teams that need quarterbacks. And Manish, I'm going to give this one to you here, where it's Shedeur Sanders is not throwing at the combine. And the biggest thing with this is you asked a question in here that I really liked, and I think we could talk about this more, is in general, does it actually really matter if quarterbacks throw at the event? And I know there's been some big profile guys that have not thrown at the combine over the last few years. And even some guys who don't participate, it's kind of like they wait till they're all pro, the pro day, or, you know, come out and even say, like, you know, the tape really tells the tale. And I'm kind of a believer in the fact that the combine is a great measure of athletic ability and everything, but at the end of the day, you're not facing a pass rush. You don't have any pads on. You're throwing bombs to receivers you've never played with before that run 4.240s, which, of course, anybody's going to look wonderful doing that stuff. But when you see the actual tape of a player playing, that's what really jumps out to me to be like, okay, can this guy take the heat of the moment? Can he come up clutch? Can he throw a pass with a defender rushing his face? Can he scramble out of the pocket and make a play when he needs to? And obviously, we know what Sanders can do with what he did at Colorado the last couple of years, with obviously his dad coaching him and everything. But for you, where he's supposed to be that generational talent, does this make a difference to teams when they're looking at him at the combine? Where is he being too flashy again, the whole primetime thing? Or what does this say about the kid?
I think it says that he's getting great advice, to be perfectly honest with you. And this is coming from a guy who doesn't always agree with what Deion Sanders says or does. But I think it makes, you know, perfect sense to skip this. This is, and Deion knows this, you know, being not only a former player, but being in the media, or at least working, you know, working for the NFL Network. This is a TV event. So the NFL is not happy, obviously, when quarterbacks who are projected to be, you know, top 10 picks or first round picks don't throw at the combine. But it makes no difference. And believe me, talking to general managers, front office execs, scouts through the years, it does not impact their evaluation of a top flight quarterback in the least bit. Because as you said, Hogan, I mean, they're throwing to guys that they're not used to throwing to. So maybe the timing's a little bit off. And even if the timing's not off, I mean, even if they're throwing well, who cares? They're wearing t-shirt and shorts. That means nothing. If you're going to do that as a team and take stock in like how well a quarterback performed at the RCA Dome or whatever it's called now, then you're probably not a good organization. None of that stuff matters. He will get a chance at Colorado Pro Day to throw to guys he's familiar with in an environment that he's comfortable with. And then after those workouts, he will have private interview sessions with various teams up at somewhere on campus, or maybe, you know, at the football facility, whatever, you know, go to dinner locally so the teams can get to know him a little bit better. This just hurts NFL Network's ratings. I mean, that's where ESPN's ratings. I guess it's on NFL Network. That's all it is. It's a TV event. It means nothing when it comes to whether a quarterback's stock is going to drop or go up. None of it really matters. If you're like a mid-round quarterback or projected mid-round pick, you certainly should throw because, again, you're eager to do whatever it takes to make it in the league. Your first round pick, it does nothing for you. Now, if you skip your pro day and you're a quarterback, and honestly, I can't remember the last quarterback to skip his pro day because I don't think that's wise. Then that's a different discussion, but he's not going to do that. The bigger question for me when it comes to Shedeur Sanders specifically is he actually talented enough to be a difference maker at the quarterback position in the NFL? Because I didn't see a lot of dynamic plays from him, but I want to be fair because Colorado's offensive line was awful. So he took a beating. Maybe that affected his decision-making from time to time. He did have, you know, a fair measure of success, but I don't think he's a dynamic player. But I'm not a scout. You know, I'm the same guy, and I'm not going to mention different quarterbacks in the league now. And I've whiffed a lot on different quarterbacks. I've been right a bunch, but I'm not a scout, so I'm not paid to, you know, go to the college games and watch these guys perform. What I do know is that I have seen – a fair amount of Colorado games simply because of the hype surrounding Deion the last 2 years. So I've seen Shedeur play, and I don't think he's really a guy that I would take with a, you know, top 10 pick. I don't know, you know, desperate teams will make desperate decisions. You see that year in and year out. So maybe he does go top five. I tend to think that he won't. I think, you know, I think there'll be a desperate team, but I think that team will probably be between 5 and 15. And I think that's kind of where he lands. Another conventional wisdom throughout the season was Ward and Sanders would go 1-2 in whatever order. I don't think that's the case. I think a guy like Abdul Carter will be the first non-quarterback taken. Sorry, Patriot fans. I'd be stunned if he's not one of the first three players taken in this draft. I think there's a real chance he'll be one. I certainly think that the odds are high that he'll be a top three pick. He's the difference maker that, you know, if he's healthy, will not disappoint at all. He's a stress reaction. The latest word is that he won't need surgery because it was really preemptive surgery, which is not something you want. A stress reaction, if not taken care of properly, can morph into a stress fracture, and then you're kind of screwed. But at the stress reaction part of it is kind of like when you have tendonitis in your rotator cuff. If you don't take care of it, it's going to become a rotator cuff tear, and then you're going to need surgery, and you're going to have a whole boatload of problems. So maybe rest, is enough for him. I just know the guy's a great player. I mean, anybody who watches college football, even a little bit, knows that he is going to hit the ground running and be a difference maker from week one.
Absolutely. And, well, I hope you're wrong, and I hope he is playing for the Patriots. No, I'm just kidding. We'll see what happens, obviously. You never know with the draft stuff that always – goes on with everything where, you know, teams always do crazy things leading up to the draft. And obviously we still got free agency to get to at some point. But the big thing, obviously, Manish, I kind of want to go back to you a little bit, is the whole idea of the combine, where these teams are obviously so interconnected with each other, where you have so many scouts, you have so many GMs, you have so many coaches that are there talking to different players and different facets of this game, where there's got to be some shenanigans going on at the combine, right? And of course, I'm going to use that word that everybody throws out there, is the tampering. The tampering is going on, right? How much do we actually see happening at the combine at that level?
You see it at every corner. For people who are unfamiliar, the combine's in Indianapolis, and the stadium is right next to the Indiana Convention Center. So for anyone who's gone to any convention center in any city, you know how cavernous a convention center is. There's hallways all over the place. And in Indianapolis, you've got the JW Marriott, you've got the Marriott, a few other hotels that are connected to the convention center. So whether it's in the hallways, in a corner, I've seen that many, many times over the last 15 years, where you have an agent talking to a general manager and or head coach in a corner. A lot of times they're in hotel rooms. Many, many times they're at different bars inside the hotels. There's a couple of Starbucks and a couple of these places where they're just sitting out in the open. There's also places, for example, there's a place that's connected to the Marriott that a lot of people go for lunch. You know, one random day I saw a high-profile agent who represented probably, I would say, like 30% of the top flight free agents at that particular time, about 10 years ago, who was just sitting in the back having lunch with Bill Belichick. And then you have to cross-reference, well, who does this agent represent who's in free agency this year? And then you do. And then it's funny to see, you know, a few weeks later, the Patriots sign, you know, one or two of his clients. And you know that, you know, those deals are done at, over lunch, you know, or having a beer, or sitting in the hallway in a corner. It's actually pretty fascinating. Fans would absolutely love it. You know, if they could like put away their phones and their cameras and just kind of walk through the convention center and, you know, go to the different hotels and the different bars and, you know, like I said, Starbucks or coffee shops, they would be absolutely stunned any given time during the course of the week. Any given day, any given time during the day, usually, you know, before dinner, before 6 o'clock. So, you know, basically you're talking free reign from like 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. You'll see head coaches, general managers, and agents who fans probably can't recognize. And they're just sitting there and they're talking, they're making deals. I mean, this is what's actually happening. They are absolutely making deals. I remember, without giving away names, I was coming up an escalator. And a prominent agent, again, one of the, I would say probably one of the top five or six agents in terms of clientele in the NFL was going down the escalator. And I said to him, I heard that the Jets are interested in, you know, his top free agent that particular year. And so, so I'm going off the escalator. He goes down the escalator and then quickly gets back on the up escalator and kind of like runs up to me and says, oh, well, what have you heard? And then we were talking, and then and the Jets actually did sign this guy. And so, you know, I heard from somebody in the organization in the front office that they were targeting this one particular player before the team had actually scheduled. They scheduled a meeting with the agent, and they were going to meet with the agent later that day or the next day. And so I actually told him, the Jets are like, they're not BSing you. Like, you schedule the meeting because you think, you know, as an agent, you want to cast a wide net. You want to find out what the market value is. And the market's actually set at the combine for particular high-end players. You get a gauge as an agent. Who are the teams that are really serious about your client? What's the actual market? Because you can come in the combine week as an agent saying, well, I think my guy's worth $12 million a year. And then you talk to seven different teams and you find out your guy's actually worth $17 million a year. Or you're disappointed and you find out, you know, your guy's probably worth closer to $10 million a year. So the market actually gets set during these meetings at the combine. And that's during the daytime. That's really where like a lot of the business is done. A lot of the BS and like, you know, kind of tabloidy stuff occurs after, you know, dinner time when, you know, guys are at different bars. And you can go into a specific bar and find, you know, 10 head coaches. I'll give you one story without giving away one of the head coaches, because he's still a current head coach, but I'll mention Jerry Jones. So Jerry Jones, there were six people left at the steakhouse that was open. It's called Prime 41 now. It was called something else, like it was called something else 15 years ago. But they basically stay open until sunrise. There were five people left in the bar. It was me, another reporter, Jerry Jones, a current NFL head coach of a playoff team. I'll leave it at that. And you know, other people that are not affiliated with the NFL. It was like 5 a.m. And you see and hear different conversation because there's only like five of us in the bar. I mean, this is a bar that's packed with hundreds of people throughout the night. And then it kind of siphons off until there's like five or six people there. And I had never met Jerry Jones before. This is the first time I actually met Jerry Jones. I had a great conversation. He probably wouldn't even remember it. I'm not sure he was, you know, fully, yeah, you know, it's a bar. So it's, you know, I'll say that. And you get so much information, you know, you just have to stick it out. You know, I'm speaking from a reporter media perspective. If you stick it out, you'll see some things that you wouldn't believe, and you'll hear some things that you wouldn't believe. And I know I got guys, I shared a story. I'll give everybody the Cliff Notes version of that. At the combine, I was talking with a couple reporters and an agent at a bar late at night, and Aaron Hernandez showed up. And this was early in Aaron Hernandez's career. You know, he had established himself as a difference-making player. And we were at the bar together for, I don't know, an hour or so. We decided to go to a different bar, and we shared a cab. I was in the front seat. The other four guys were in the back. And they stuck me, the reporter, like the average everyday man, with the bill. Not Aaron Hernandez, who, you know, had made millions by then. He stuck me with the bill, and then we went to another bar, and we spent, you know, some time there. And I made a joke about something, and Hernandez did not like it, so he shot me the nastiest look, you know, figuratively shot me the nastiest look. And then just to fast forward to the end of the day, we left the bar, we went into a cab, we were hailing a cab, and Hernandez was inebriated and decided to relieve himself on the cab in the middle of an Indianapolis street. One of the, you know, memories that I'll never forget. And I know the two guys who are in the media now, still to this day, who cover the NFL. I know those guys won't forget either. But those are the types of things. It's almost like a weird universe. It's like the rules don't apply. And typically, again, you don't see current NFL players there. It's just college players. And then every major decision maker in the NFL, general manager, you know, coaches, head coaches, scouts and such. But you see a lot of interesting things that you don't see anywhere else at any other time during the year. Just a weird, like, I would hope that every fan got an opportunity to see this. It's so strange. And for fans, it'd be surreal because, you know, they don't get to see these coaches and general managers, you know, up close and personal. But just to see the deal making that that happens, sometimes in secluded areas and sometimes really just out in the open, like, you know, in the corner of a convention center. It's fascinating. But yeah, it's tampering. And I mean, the NFL doesn't care. They couldn't care less. They know it's happening. Anybody with eyes can see that it's happening. And it's happening throughout the day for essentially a week. And that's where all the groundwork gets done. I've had many agents tell me they knew when they left the combine that their client was going to sign with this team. Now, some players were like, I talked to like four teams that said they were serious, but I won't find out how serious they are until free agency begins. And then they actually give me their offer. That happens a lot, but there have been many times where agents of high profile players have told me, you know, in retrospect, I knew that my guy was going to go to the Raiders or they were going to the Chiefs. I knew based on the conversations, based on the numbers that were being floated around. So that's why this week is pivotal. Even though free agency technically doesn't start for another couple weeks, it's underway now. And I would say probably, you know, 30-40% of free agents already know where they're going, or at least their agents know where they're going. And it's just a matter of kind of like getting some of the details on the contract numbers. But the numbers are being discussed. They're being discussed now. And, you know, so from a Patriots perspective, for example, I would say that Elliott Wolf and Mike Vrabel have a pretty good idea of who they have a chance of getting in free agency and who they're not going to get. You know, maybe they're too pricey, you know, and I don't want to drag this on. I know we're probably going to talk about the Patriots a little bit, but Mike Vrabel, I thought, said something interesting about understanding that in free agency, you're going to have to group players, you have a group of three or four players. Maybe you're going to have to overspend. Elliott Wolf said they're not going to be frivolous. They know what they need. So you got to go in. The best teams know who they want to target. And if they realize quickly during these conversations in Indianapolis that it's not going to happen, they pivot to, you know, option. It's not really option B. It's like option 1A and 1B and 1C. There is one thing, though, and I know I'm dragging this on, but there is one thing that Vrabel said this week that I really can't relate to. He, you know, used an analogy of like buying a car. And if you really like a car, there's only one left, you're probably going to overpay for it. And I don't know, like, you know, Mike Vrabel's got more money than I can ever dream of. So maybe this applies to him. I've never in my life overpaid for a car because there's only one car that of that style that I liked. Like, if there's only one car and you're not getting a good price, you walk away. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny in my life. Like, I'm not overpaying for a car because there's only one Honda Accord left on the lot. I'm just going to go pay for it.
Well, I got two things out of that. First and foremost, I need to take time off from work at some point in the future to go to the combine to just see what all the shenanigans are about. And then number two, I don't know if they're still doing that Hernandez show, but if they are, I can't wait to see who they cast as Manish Mehta to be on that episode.
No,
there's only leaving himself on a taxi. I got to see.
There's
that.
Only four That's people be... that there's four people that have that story. Three media members and one agent. So, no, I think it's in the vault. I mean, I just took it out of the vault, but. It's just too good of a story to pass on.
That's one of the best stories I've heard.
One of the best stories I've heard too.
It's unbelievable. Well, before we wrap this up, you kind of brought up the Patriots a little bit there, and I'm going to throw it to my buddy Burge to fill in the gaps here. But at this point, buddy, have you heard anything that is exciting you more about the whole Vrabel tenure kicking off the way it is? Like Manish was talking about potentially with the spending. I know the salary cap was recently just raised to, I think, the highest ever. Patriots have, they're going to be pissing out money everywhere because they just have so much of it. If Kraft actually decides to spend it, you know, trying to improve that D on his ownership there. But did you hear anything? Did you hear anything that getting you excited going into free agency or the draft for the Patriots?
I, you know, just listening to him talk just makes me truly believe that there's finally some competency back with this team. So I'm excited to see where they go. Obviously, you know, seeing guys like T. Higgins and Trey Smith get the franchise tag kind of is like, well, those are two big names that, you know, were linked to the Patriots who they were going to maybe be pursuing in free agency. So, you know, that takes a little bit of a hit on it. But just listening to Vrabel talk and obviously the allure of having all this money for free agency and a high draft pick, there's just excitement everywhere. Like, I'm counting down the days until – the legal tampering period, so they call it, before free agency actually opens, even though, as Manish just told us, tampering occurs before the legal tampering period, before free agency starts. It's all convoluted. Like, just get rid of it all. Anyways. But everything about it just has me finally excited for the Patriots for the first time. Probably in like 3 years, I was excited going into, you know, Mac Jones' second year after their playoff appearance in the first year. And obviously we know how that ended up for us Patriots fans, but just overall, it feels like they got the shit together. They actually feel like, I don't feel like I'm listening to Gerard Mayo saying we're going to burn cash and then walk the comment back, where Vrabel's kind of like, well, hopefully we're going to be aggressive. We have the money, you know, hopefully we're going to take our approach. We know what we need and be smart about it. So I'm very excited for the next, we'll call it 3 months of the off season between free agency and the draft to get moving along here and see what the team's actually going to look like going into 2025.
Agreed. Cause I know one big thing that caught a lot of Patriots fans' attention was the release of Taki the other day, which honestly was an Elliott Wolf signing. That was his guy. That was a big thing last year that a lot of people talked about, where it wasn't so much Gerard Mayo was gung ho for him. It was an Elliott Wolf thing. So a lot of people kind of raised their eyebrows at that, being like, okay, well, clearly Vrabel's got a say in this, because if it's Wolf's say, he's probably keeping him because he pinned him as his guy, where Vrabel's like, no, hit the bricks. You're not on my team. And he's obviously come out and said that the roster is going to look significantly different at the end of August than it does right now, which is music to my ears, mm-hmm. because that roster was dog shit last year. I'll say it. Mm-hmm. I don't care. It was horrible. The team was horrible. I don't know. They should have gotten Fs on everything as far as I'm concerned in their little survey thing there. I'll say it. I'm not a player, but I'll vote for it. Give them all Fs as far as I'm concerned. Hopefully this year gets off to a better start than last year. Certainly seems to be that way with Mike Vrabel at the helm of things. We will love to see some changes around here. But speaking of changes, gentlemen, I think that's everything we got going into this brand new offseason of 2025. As always, it is a blast kicking it with you, listening to ridiculous stories from our guy Manish down there. We love hearing them all the time. You listeners out there, I hope you appreciate them as much as Burge and I do. Burge, my man, it was great having you back. Without further ado, gents, I think that's a wrap. You guys got anything else before we sign this diddly-doo? I don't know why I just said that. I just feel like I'm just rambling. I'm trying to take a page out of Manish's book. I'm just rambling at this point. I don't know what the hell I'm trying to say.
I did not have – what did you say, diddly-do? I did not
I
have
don't
that.
Know. That just came out.
I didn't have that on the podcast bingo card. Yeah, I didn't have
Well, we'll put it down there, because I'll make sure, just like my Jalen Hurts piss you off moment, I'm gonna add it to the list going forward. Burgess, my man, take it away.
Peace.
Later.